guest we have on today is that first guest. Now, before Peggy officially introduced him, I want her to introduce him because she's worked with him before. I want to read you something that I don't know how to pronounce his name, but I think it's Dr. Matthew Forstater, the professor of economics at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. This is what he had to say about our guest. And I quote, "I can say without hesitation that Warren Mosler has had the most profound impact on our understanding of modern money and government budgets of anyone I know or know of, including Nobel Prize winners, central bank directors, ministers of finance, and full professors at Ivy League universities. It is no exaggeration to say that his ideas concerning economic theory and policy are responsible for the most exciting new paradigm in economics in the last 30 years, perhaps longer. And he has inspired more economists to turn their attention to the real world of economic policy than any other single individual." That is really significant. Peggy, introduce our guest.
Well, and he is truly a real Renaissance man. You guys are going to like this because he is also the founder of Mosler Automotive. He makes fast cars. He's a great economist. He has briefly run for president, run for Senate. He's written a book called The Seven Deadly Innocent Frauds of Economic Policy, which you can go online to his website, MoslerEconomics.com, and you can read it. And it's absolutely fabulous. Warren Mosler, thank you so much for joining us today from St. Croix. And folks, you're going to be so jealous. He's on a boat right now.
I'm glad I was
morning,
sitting down when I heard all that. Good morning. I'm glad I was sitting down when I heard all that. Thank you.
Hey, I tell you what, Warren, I've introduced a lot of guests here over the years. I've never had anybody with some of the comments that that you have. Very, very impressive, sir. CNBC said you're one of the brightest minds in finance, so I got a couple of questions to ask you. First of all, you've written this book, The Seven Deadly Innocent Frauds of Economic Policy. Can you elaborate a little bit, maybe discuss a few of those with us?
The first one is that the government, the federal government now, has to get dollars through either through taxing to be able to spend. The one that doesn't tax has to borrow to be able to spend, and then we're going to leave the bill to our grandchildren and then all that nonsense you've heard. Okay, that's
right.
Clearly not true. And the easiest way, but everybody, you talk to any congressman, he says, yes, we need to get money to be able to spend it. But if you think about it, if you were to pay your taxes with a bunch of old $20 bills, your federal taxes, they would take your money, give you a receipt, and say thank you for helping to pay for Social Security and Afghanistan. Then they throw it in the shredder. Okay, and then you can buy the shredded money in Washington. So us taking your money and shred it, pay for anything, how does that show that they actually need your money? Well, they don't. And if you write the government a check, all the guy at the IRS does is he changes the number down in your bank account. Doesn't get anything. There's no gold coins drop into a box or anything like that. And if you look at how the government spends, say, well, where does it get the money from spending if it's throwing away your tax money? Well, the chairman, Bernanke, told us, we were asked where the hundreds of billions came from for the banks, and he said, well, we just use the computer to mark up the numbers and their bank accounts. Okay, and that's where every penny of federal spending comes from. They just change numbers up to your bank account. And so government spending is not constrained by revenues at the operational level. Now, Congress certainly constrains it based on revenues, but if you look at, you know, I've been an insider at the Fed monetary operations for 40 years now, and everybody at the Fed knows that. The guy spending is just changing numbers up in bank accounts. The guy taxing, he's just changing numbers down. It's kind of like a field goal, and you get 3 points. Oh, where does the stadium get the 3 points for this scoreboard? You know, they don't get them from anywhere.
Christian, I have to ask, are you concerned about the federal deficit, though, being as high as it is?
I'm not concerned about the government running out of money or dollars, okay? I'm not concerned about borrowing from China, because we're not. That's you can use the word borrowing, but if you look at the accounts, all we're doing is shifting their dollars from a checking account to a savings account at the Fed, and we call that borrowing. They call it whatever you want. I'm not saying it's a lie, but it's very misleading. And there's no grandchildren paying it back. So the normal problems associated with deficit spending are not there. It's just not there. And I think when the U.S. was downgraded and interest rates went down, that pretty much demonstrated to everybody that that was not an Armageddon. The U.S. is not dependent on borrowing. It's not dependent on British agencies. It's just plain changing numbers. Now, the risk, right. The true risks are inflation and wasting resources. And I'm certainly against wasting resources. I don't think the government should hire people to dig holes and hire more people to fill them in. That's wrong and it's wasteful. We shouldn't do that. And overspending and undertaxing could certainly cause inflation. But, you know, to get out of a hole, you have to stop digging it right now. When was the last time anybody saw the price of a house go up? But we don't have an inflation problem right now from overspending.
No, we don't.
Well, you know, we might have an inflation problem from the Saudis hiking gas prices. That's not overspending. That's a very different thing.
Now, the last time we were kind of in a pickle like this was in the late 70s and early 80s, and we're about to go into a break here in just a minute, so let me kind of, I'll throw this out, and maybe you can address it on the other side, but really the last time that I can remember, I've been in the business since the mid-70s, and so I was younger at the time, I'm in my 60s now, but you know, we really kind of went into a pickle in the late 70s, Volcker came in, but to come out of that, we had outrageous inflation, and I've heard from other economists that the way we're going to get out of this situation is we're going to have to inflate our way out of this situation. So I would like you to address that. If you'll hang on for just a few moments, we'll be back on the other side of the break, and we'll talk about that. Today to have Warren Moser with us. Warren is a Renaissance man. We just actually don't have time, since it's only an hour show, to read all the things about him. Peggy's over here laughing, but it's true. He's currently located in the Virgin Islands of St. Croix. But let me just give you this one sentence from CNBC. One of the brightest minds in finance. That says it all. And so just before the break, I asked Warren what he thought about inflation, whether or not we were going to have to inflate our way out of the situation that we're in. So, Warren, what do you think?
Right now, the answer is no. You asked about the 70s. In the 70s, the Saudi pipe crisis from $3 a barrel to $40 a barrel over 10 years. And that's what created the inflation. What drove the inflation was the weak regulated natural gas in 1978. Which utilities then started buying like crazy. They substituted waste of oil for make electric power. They substituted natural gas, and the OPEC drowned in its oil. That huge excess supply couldn't keep the price up. They cut production 15 million barrels a day, and it wasn't enough. And the price came down to $10. That's what ended inflation. It really had nothing to do with Fed policy, and all the econometrics show that. And if anything, the Fed policy of high interest rates kept the inflation higher or longer than it might have been otherwise. But through the cost channels, when interest rates are high, it costs more to be in business. It costs more to build a house. Everything costs more because you've got to pay cost of money. We were looking at 15 to 20% cost of money back then. That actually contributed to the inflation. What brought the inflation was the price of oil coming down. But today, we may be faced with the same thing. If something happens with Iran, they could be looking at $250 oil. They cut off 4 or 5 million barrels a day. I'm not saying they're going to do it. Maybe it's a 10% chance, but it could happen. And then you would see inflation coming through the cost side. And there's nothing we can do about it with regards to monetary policy. More unemployment or less unemployment just isn't going to change that. That's just a shortage of the higher price of oil. And there are regional price centers at the margin. Now, what we could do is what I think is done with every commodity at the governmental level, and that is you enter into long-term contracts. And so our government could enter into a long-term contract with Canada at a fixed price, and a long-term contract with Mexico at a fixed price for imported oil. And that way it would be stable. If the price went down, we wouldn't get the advantage, but if the price went up, we wouldn't have inflation, and both countries would be better off for it. But there's no will call to do that. So we're just going to be subject to the spot market in oil, and that's going to affect our inflation rate.
Well, and it's everybody's best. You know, I had a guest on the other day that was talking about Russia and how, as far as Russia was concerned, it was in their best interest for oil prices to stay higher. So they were going he felt like they were going to continue to agitate the Middle East and aid Iran in order to keep this oil price situation on the front burner and keep oil prices higher. Any thoughts on that?
No, I couldn't agree more. It doesn't make any sense to keep 300 million Americans leveraged to the spot price of oil. But that's what we're doing. We're just living and dying off the spot price of oil. And with no real energy policies that change that. Even if we drill or whatnot, get an extra million or 2 million barrels a day, the price is still going to be determined in those overseas markets. Now, longer term, it looks like there's a slow change coming on the supply side, and we're getting away from consumption with our electric cars and hybrids and whatnot. Our gasoline consumption has dropped, I think, 7% year over year, which is good, and we're getting more output. But we're talking about 4, 5, 6, 10 year time frame for this to happen. It's going to live through the next 2 or 3 years. It's not going to help us much with that.
Warren, I just want to kind of back up a little bit, and my other folks that follow all your websites are certainly nervous about you, but you actually were going to run against Obama in 2009. Of course, you dropped out of that, and had things gone differently, you might be the president today. What do you think how Obama's doing?
Well, he's not doing very well, but nobody else has to do much better. I was invited to run for the U.S. Senate 2 years ago, so I switched from running for president for U.S. Senate by the independents in Connecticut. My lead proposal was a full payroll tax holiday, which did get to the White House, and they did wind up cutting it 2%. We really needed the whole thing eliminated, both for business and for individuals, but at least something came out of the campaign, so that was a good thing. And, but the problem is both sides want to reduce the deficit now. With our problem at hand is that the deficit is too small. The deficit needs to be larger right now. And my proposals are for immediate suspension of all FICA taxes, Social Security, and payroll taxes, a little bit of revenue for the states, and now get sales back. The reason the economy collapsed, the only reason the economy ever collapses is because sales collapse. The economy is sales. GDP is sales. Final sales and immediate sales. And so if you look at 2008, car sales suddenly dropped from 17 million to 9 million. And that's why 8 million people lost their jobs, because when sales go down, jobs go down. The only way you get everybody back to work is when sales go up. And right now everybody's broke. The obvious problem with the economy is there's not enough money to spend. This business competes for consumer dollars, but there have to be consumer dollars for business to compete for. And who better to have consumer dollars than the people actually doing the work to build the product that we're all consuming and living on, the people doing the real work? So by suspending the FICA taxes, which are highly regressive, punishing taxes on people who actually do the real work, so that they have enough money to buy their own output and restore the economy, you know, what's wrong with that? Well, nobody objects to that. They just say, okay, well, where's the money going to come from for Social Security and Medicare? And that's where the understanding of the monetary system comes in. You need to understand that those dollars don't come from anywhere. It's just, as Chairman Bernanke told us, the government just changes the number in your bank account when you get your Social Security. It changes the number in the hospital's bank account when it pays for Medicare. It's not taxpayer money per se. It's not taking these dollars and putting it in a bucket, driving it to the next room and plugging it to the computer. It's just changing numbers. And so the last, I know we're running out of time, but you have to ask, what is the function of taxes if it's not to bring in money? The function of taxes is to regulate the economy. What the economists would call regulate aggregate demand. It's really very simple. You look at the economy and you say, is it too hot or too cold? Now, sometimes it's pretty hard to say. Unemployment's at 4%. Some people might think it's a little too hot. Some people might think it's too cold. But right now, everybody agrees the economy is ice cold. So the answer is to stop taking money out of it so that people have more money to spend. You lower taxes. For a given size of government, there's always the right level of taxes for a good economy. Now, some people might think we should increase the size of government. Other people, we need lower taxes. That's a political decision. Once we decide on the right size government, the right number of soldiers, the right number of judges, the right number of everything else the government does, then there is a right level of taxes for full employment and prosperity, and that is not balanced. Okay, it may be for a brief instant. It was in 2000, 1998, 1999, because the private sector was borrowing like crazy. But as soon as that ended, we needed to shift the deficit. The size government we had was mostly overtaxed, and we needed to cut taxes. And so think of taxes as the thermostat. Once you've got the government set to the size we want, you just adjust taxes like you adjust the thermostat. If the economy's ice cold, you lower taxes to warm it up. If the economy's overheating, unemployment's down to 3%, we've got inflation going, okay. Now the economy's too hot, we want to cool it down, we would raise taxes. But not to bring in money to pay for anything, to take money out of the economy to cool it down, to cool down an overheating economy. So if I can leave you with one thought, is to think of taxes as the thermostat that regulates the economy.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And you mentioned in your comments that that everybody understands this, so why aren't they doing anything about it?
Because the way I say it is because we're afraid or we think we could be the next Greece, we're turning ourselves into the next Japan. Now, what Greece and all the other European countries did is they turned themselves into U.S. states. So we all know that a state can go broke like California or Illinois or Connecticut. And so Greece and Portugal and France, they can all go broke just like the U.S. states can. But not the Federal Reserve and not the European Central Bank. If you notice, every time the European Central Bank writes a check, whether it's 500 billion euro or 100 billion euro, there's no talk about who's going to fund them or where does the money come from. There is no such thing. They're just the scorekeeper, they're running the books, just like our Federal Reserve is. And so the people who are concerned about, cutting taxes to help the economy or increasing spending, again, depending on your politics, they think they're confusing the Federal Reserve, the U.S. Treasury, with Greece, which is a state like California. They're confusing the user of a currency with the issuer of currency. The U.S. government, the government of Japan, the government of the U.K., the European Central Bank, they're all the issuer of the currency. There's never any solvency problem. Japan's debt is 3 times higher than the U.S. They've been doing, their interest rates have been zero for 20 years now, or near zero for 20 years. They've got the strongest currency in the world and the lowest inflation. And they've been downgraded below Botswana. And they still have, their 10-year interest rate is still under 1%. It's not about solvency or creditworthiness or anything else when you're the issuer of a currency. It's all about that when you're the user of a currency like AIG or California or Greece or Portugal. And you've got to understand the difference between the issuer and the user to feel to be able to move forward with what we need to do to fix the economy.
Yeah, but they don't seem to be doing it up there. They seem to be very confused in Washington. And it makes it, as a consumer, not just as a financial advisor, but as a consumer, I sit back and I just wonder, it's like a bunch of, I can remember in kindergarten, we used to run around on the playground like a bunch of kids. Yeah. And in fact, I ran into a doorknob and got my first black eye. So it shows you how good I can run around. But that's what it seems like in Congress, is that all they want to do is bash on each other, and they don't seem to be getting anything done.
Yeah, and they think we need to, cut back the sacrifice here when we've got 10 or 15% unemployment, depending on how you measure. It reminds me of the carpenter with this piece of wood who said, no matter how much I cut off, it's still too short. it just doesn't work that way. It just got it backwards. It's got to keep making everything worse. I call it death by a thousand cuts. I've called it everything. And you've got both sides agreeing that we need to cut $4 to $6 trillion off the deficit, and it's just going to make it worse. Now, there could be other credit conditions where you wouldn't want to increase the deficit. If the private sector had a housing boom going, we were borrowing like crazy with mortgages like we're doing 12 years ago, or we had a subprime mortgage expansion where everybody was borrowing like crazy, we had a credit card bill, boom. Yeah, then it's inappropriate for the government to be running a deficit, which just causes inflation. But right now, the private sector credit side is just ice cold, dead as a doornail. The correct policy is for the government to move the other direction, either lower taxes or increase spending, make the deficit larger, so people have more money to spend, so business can compete for our dollars. And the guy who makes the best ketchup is going to make $1 billion because we have enough money to buy ketchup and everybody's happy because we get the best ketchup. And that's what American capitalism works the way it's supposed to work. Not what we're doing, which is just strangling ourselves with overly tight fiscal policy.
Hey, Warren, I've got a question. expected it then for you that since you're an expert on monetary policy, what will happen when if the day ever comes when the U.S. dollar is not the currency of choice in the world?
Well, you know, it really doesn't matter. I started off in the early 70s. I was a mid-70s. I was in Bankers Trust, Wall Street. Every morning just went down to see how many bonds the Bank of England bought. Everybody was in the newspapers. What would ever happen if the Bank of England didn't buy a bond? Then it was the Japanese, the Saudis, and now it's the Chinese. If you notice, the Chinese haven't bought any bonds. They've been in that liquidating for the last several months. The interest rates are still going down. The dollar is still strong. So, it just doesn't matter. It's not a factor. Now, it's not that the dollar can't move up or down short term, but it doesn't need to interfere with Main Street. Wall Street doesn't have to interfere with Main Street. We can keep full employment. We can go to work, build cars, drive them, go to work, grow food and eat it. We can be personal trainers for each other. We can go to work and be nurses and doctors and hospital attendants and take care of ourselves. We can do all that. There's no reason to let the financial structure get in the way of any of that. The only reason it happens is because we don't understand the financial structure and don't understand what funds is which. Now, think of these people trying to fly a helicopter. I have no idea what they're doing. You know, all these buttons all over, they're just pushing these buttons, trying to make them go up or down or left or right. They're just pushing the wrong buttons. Have you ever used a boat where you have a rudder? If you push the rudder to the left, the boat will go right. Okay, and if you push it to the right, the boat will go left. Well, yeah, Congress has it backwards. When they push it, they think to make the boat go to the left, you have to push the rudder to the left. So they push it a little bit to the left, and the boat goes to the right. So now they're going to push it more to the left. It goes more to the right. And they keep doing it. They just keep making it worse. Not just here, but everywhere in the world right now.
You know, Warren, I wish you would run again, or at least I
could. I really do. You got my vote. You really do.
We're coming up against
political traction is just so hard to get, but thank you for giving me the time to get here.
We appreciate it very much. Can you hang on for just 1 second? I'd like to talk to you about your book for a little bit when we get back. All right, thank you, sir.
It's Making It to Today's Economy with Mike Robertson.
And welcome back. You're listening to Straight Talk Money. I'm Peggy Tech along with Mike Robertson. Of course, on the phone, we've got our very special guest today, Warren Mosler. His book is The Seven Deadly Innocent Frauds of Economic Policy. And you can go to MoslerEconomics.com and you can actually read the book. And Warren, why offer it out there for free?
You know, the whole point was to get people to read it. You know, I'm 63 years old. I like to live in a good economy. But it's very overrated and do the right thing, which is basically don't vote for anyone for federal office who wants to balance the budget. And I know that leaves out a lot of candidates, but that's the problem right now. When you read the book, you'll understand that. You'll understand why and how we're not. There's no problem with paying back China. And Social Security is not broken. It can't run out of money. There is no such thing. And that the trade deficit is not a problem. It's actually a good thing. All these moves to reduce the trade deficit are killing the goods, inflating the gold and the egg, and they're reducing our standards of living. It's just even happening. And it's written in a completely non-technical language. Anybody can understand it. And it's just the way I've been talking. It's how things work. And it's everyone in the Federal Reserve knows it, or Treasury. I highly recommend it. I just want everyone to read it. It's just broken account.
Well, we will promote it, and the way you've been talking has been great, and thank you for so much for being on with us, Warren.
Okay. And thanks for having me.
Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, sir. If you have any questions about anything.
Thank you. Appreciate it very much.
And folks, be sure to go to, you can read Warren Mosler's blog at MoslerEconomics.com, the center of the universe, which today happens to be in St. Croix, Virgin Islands. Have a great day, Warren.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you. And as we do every Friday, Sterling Millen's on with us to tell us what's going on.